Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Jill Robbins reports on a study that shows extreme weather has caused 2 million deaths over the last 50 years. Faith Perlow and Dan Friedel bring us this week's Everyday Grammar lesson on the language of having guests and visiting people. Later, we listen to the next part in our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first,
the World Meteorological Organization, or WMO, said in its latest report that extreme weather caused more than 2 million deaths over the past 50 years. Weather and water-related events also caused economic damage, estimated to cost $4.3 trillion around the world over the same period. The United Nations Weather Agency said the economic damage continues to rise. But it says improvements in early warning systems have helped reduce casualties. Economic losses have soared, but improved early warnings and coordinated disaster management has slashed the human casualty toll over the past 50 years, the WMO said in a statement. The weather agency, based in Geneva, Switzerland, has repeatedly warned about man-made climate change. It says rising temperatures have increased the number and intensity of extreme weather events. These include floods, storms, extremely hot weather, and a lack of rain. The WMO said most of the economic damage between 1970 and 2021 took place in the United States. The damage there totaled $1.7 trillion. However, 90% of the deaths worldwide took place in developing countries. The agency said developing countries suffered a high cost when the size of their economies is considered. WMO Secretary General Petteri Talas said Cyclone Mocha showed how at-risk countries bear the brunt of weather, climate, and water-related hazards. The powerful ocean storm swept across Myanmar and Bangladesh this month. In the past, both Myanmar and Bangladesh suffered death tolls of tens and even hundreds of thousands of people, he said. Thanks to early warnings and disaster management, these catastrophic mortality rates are now, thankfully, history. Early warnings save lives, he said. The WMO identified nearly 12,000 extreme weather events in its Atlas of Mortality and Economic Loss from Weather, Climate, and Water-Related Hazards. It is an update to a report which covered a nearly 50-year period through 2019. WMO admits that the number of disasters could have risen because of increased reporting on extreme weather events. The agency also said that their reports could underestimate the economic damage. In Africa, the WMO counted more than 1,800 disasters and 733,585 deaths related to extreme weather, including flooding and storms. The UN agency said the costliest was Tropical Cyclone Idai in 2019, which reportedly caused $2.1 billion in damage. Nearly 1,500 disasters hit the Southwest Pacific, causing 66,951 deaths and $185.8 billion in economic losses. Asia faced over 3,600 disasters, costing 984,263 lives and $1.4 trillion in economic losses, mostly due to the impact of cyclones. South America had 943 disasters that resulted in 58,484 deaths and over $115 billion in economic losses. Over 2,100 disasters in North America, Central America, and the Caribbean led to 77,454 deaths and $2 trillion in economic losses. Europe had nearly 1,800 disasters, leading to 166,492 deaths and $562 billion in economic losses. Earlier in May, the WMO said world temperatures are likely to rise 1.5 degrees Celsius by 2027. The UN agency said that was a dangerous level, which could result in deaths and damage to the world's ecosystems. I'm Jill Robbins.
Do you like to have guests? Who would you invite over to a party? Would you have a guest stay overnight? In this week's Everyday Grammar, we will learn the language of inviting and visiting. I invited my niece for a visit. I hosted her over the weekend. We went to a concert together and spent time catching up. Let's look at some of the grammar of the paragraph I wrote. When we invite someone, we ask them to spend time with us socially or to come to an event. For example, I used the past tense in my paragraph above. I invited my niece for a visit. Invite can also be a noun. It is a request to take part in an event or to be present. It is the shorter, informal version of the noun invitation. I sent her an invite by text message, and she replied, yes. I sent out invitations to our housewarming party. We can combine different prepositions like along, back, in, and over with the verb invite to get more specific meanings from the base verb. These are called phrasal verbs. To invite over means to invite someone to your house. This may be a formal event, but often it can be informal, such as for drinks or to have a meal. I would like to invite you over sometime. When you invite someone in, you ask them to come into your home, especially if you have met them outside of your home. We often talk with our neighbors outside before inviting them in. I would invite you in, but the house is so messy. To invite back means that you invite someone to your home after you have been to a different place with them, especially if you have been to their house. I invited them back to my house for drinks after the concert. Lastly, to invite along means that you ask someone to go with you somewhere or to do something with you, especially if you have already made plans. Stacy invited me along to the party after my earlier plans were canceled.
Just like invite, the word visit can work as two parts of speech. As a verb, to visit means that you go see someone and spend time with them. I plan to visit her next month. As a noun, a visit means the act of spending time with someone, especially at their home. It can be a short visit, a few hours, or it can be many days. We often use it with the verb pay in everyday conversations. I'll pay her a visit next week when I have the time. We can also use the phrasal verb visit with to mean that you go to see someone and spend time talking with them. She visited with her grandparents last year. Another noun and verb combination is the word host. As a verb, to host means to receive and entertain guests. As a noun, the word describes the person who is welcoming or entertaining the guests. Lisa always hosts the best Halloween parties. Host is connected to the word hospitality, or the act of having guests, or the service of welcoming guests. The hospitality industry, for example, describes businesses including hotels, restaurants, tourism, and entertainment. A person can also be hospitable or welcoming of guests and friendly toward them. The couple were very hospitable to their guests.
If we are meeting someone after a long time apart, we might have a lot to talk about. The phrasal verb catch up describes this situation. Let's catch up next week. I'll call you. If this sentence includes who we are talking to, we use the preposition with in the phrase. I caught up with my niece over the weekend. In the paragraph about my weekend, I used the gerund form of the verb. Gerunds are verb forms that act as nouns. We spent time catching up. Today, we learned about the words invite, visit, and host, and how they work as both nouns and verbs. We also learned phrasal verbs like invite back, visit with, and catch up with. Now, let's take what we have learned and use it. Write a small paragraph about having a guest. Try to use different noun-verb combinations of the words we learned. Add a phrasal verb. Write to us in the comments or send your paragraph to learningenglish@voanews.com. We may share your message in a future Everyday Grammar. I'm Faith Perlow.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
That was Faith Perlow with this week's Everyday Grammar. Welcome back to the show, Faith.
Thanks for having me back.
This week, you wrote about having a guest over.
We looked at key words like invite, visit, and host. All three of these can have two different parts of speech, a noun meaning and a verb meaning.
You also talked about the phrasal verb catch up. This is an interesting one because doesn't it have a lot of different meanings?
You're right, Dan. In writing about guests, I used the meaning that connected with the topic. To talk with someone after you have not seen them in a while. But catch up has a lot more meanings. We use it to talk about reaching a person who is ahead of you. like in a race. If you are behind someone, say, running, you can catch up to them by running faster. We also use this meaning for talking about schooling. A lot of kids use the summer vacation to catch up to their peers in math and reading.
It can also be used like a noun too, right? Like, I have a lot of catching up to do at work since I was out of town last week.
Exactly. That's a good example. It can also refer to a meeting where people are informed about new information that developed since the last meeting, which takes us back to our original meaning from the story.
Well, I'm glad we could catch up this week, Faith.
I'm glad we could catch up too, Dan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Kennedy, a Democrat, defeated Republican Vice President Richard Nixon in one of the closest elections in United States history. He took office in January 1961. After 3 months, Kennedy faced a major foreign policy failure. On April 17th, armed Cuban exiles tried to invade Cuba, less than 150 kilometers from the American state of Florida. They had been trained by the Central Intelligence Agency. Their goal was to overthrow the island's communist leader, Fidel Castro. In 1959, he and his guerrilla forces had overthrown Fulgencio Batista, the president who was supported by the United States. The exiles came ashore at Cuba's Bay of Pigs. Most were killed or captured. The last administration, under President Dwight Eisenhower, had planned the invasion, but Kennedy had approved it. After the failure, some Americans again wondered if the 43-year-old president had enough experience to lead the nation. In May 1961, Kennedy went to Paris and met with French President Charles de Gaulle. Kennedy visited France with his wife, Jacqueline, who spoke French and had studied there. In June, Kennedy met in Vienna with Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev. Khrushchev did not want to compromise on any issue. He threatened to have the East Germans block all movement into and out of the Allied-controlled western half of Berlin. In November, the East Germans, with Soviet support, started building the Berlin Wall to separate East and West. President Kennedy quickly announced a large increase in American military forces in Germany. Less than a year later, came the Cuban Missile Crisis. On October 22, 1962, President Kennedy made an announcement to the American people.
This government, as promised, has maintained the closest surveillance of the Soviet military buildup on the island of Cuba. Within the past week, unmistakable evidence has established the fact that a series of offensive missile sites is now in preparation on that imprisoned island. The purpose of these bases can be none other than to provide a nuclear strike capability against the Western Hemisphere. Upon receiving the first preliminary hard information of this nature, last Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., I directed that our surveillance be stepped up. And having now confirmed and completed our evaluation of the evidence and our decision on a course of action, this government feels obliged to report this new crisis to you in fullest detail. The characteristic of these new missile sites indicate two distinct types of installations. Several of them include medium-range ballistic missiles capable of carrying a nuclear warhead for a distance of more than 1,000 nautical miles. Each of these missiles, in short, is capable of striking Washington, D.C., the Panama Canal, Cape Canaveral, Mexico City, or any other city in the southeastern part of the United States, in Central America, or in the Caribbean area.
Kennedy had a warning for the Soviets.
It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States, requiring a full retaliatory response upon the Soviet Union.
Kennedy and his national security advisors debated what to do about the Soviet missiles in Cuba. Should the United States try to destroy them? What if some of the nuclear missiles escaped the attack? Kennedy decided to use a naval blockade. He called it a quarantine to prevent any more Soviet ships from reaching Cuba. There were tense negotiations with the Soviets. Khrushchev demanded a promise that the United States would not invade Cuba. Kennedy agreed and did so publicly. Secretly, he also agreed to another demand. He promised that the United States would remove its Jupiter missiles based in Turkey after the crisis was over. The Cuban Missile Crisis lasted 13 days. It raised fears of a nuclear war. But it ended peacefully when the Soviets agreed to remove their missiles from Cuba and turn their ships around. But the Cold War continued. In Asia, the Kennedy administration tried to fight communism in Vietnam by increasing the number of American military advisors there. The United States and the Soviet Union did make some progress on arms control. In 1963, the two nations agreed to ban tests of nuclear weapons except underground. Kennedy also had to deal with domestic issues, including discrimination against blacks. His brother Robert was Attorney General, the nation's top law enforcement official. The Justice Department took legal action against states in the South that violated laws on voting rights. The administration also supported a voter registration campaign to sign up more black voters. Robert Kennedy repeatedly called on National Guard troops to protect blacks when they tried to register to vote or attend white schools. President Kennedy said the situation was causing a moral crisis in America. He decided it was time to propose a new civil rights law that would guarantee equal treatment for blacks in public places and jobs. Congress did not pass a wide-reaching civil rights bill until 1964. By then, Kennedy was no longer president. In November 1963, he traveled to Texas. He hoped to settle a dispute in the Democratic Party in that state. The dispute might have affected his chances for re-election in 1964. Kennedy arrived in Dallas in the late morning of November 22nd. The president and his wife were seated in the back of an open-topped car as his motorcade drove through the city. Suddenly, there were gunshots.
Bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The motorcade raced to Parkland Memorial Hospital, but doctors could do little to save his life. This was how television newsman Walter Cronkite reported the news.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Police quickly arrested a suspect. Lee Harvey Oswald worked in a building near where Kennedy had been shot. People had seen him leave the building with a gun. Lee Harvey Oswald was a man with a strange past. He was a former United States Marine. He was also a communist. He had lived for a while in the Soviet Union and had tried to become a Soviet citizen. He worked for a committee that supported the communist government in Cuba. Police questioned Oswald about the shooting of President Kennedy. He told them he did not do it. After 2 days, officials decided to move him to a different jail. Oswald was being led by two police officers. Suddenly, a man stepped forward. There was a shot. Oswald fell to the ground. Television cameras broadcast the events live. The man who killed Oswald was Jack Ruby. He was a nightclub owner in Dallas. He said he shot Oswald to prevent the Kennedy family from having to live through a trial. A commission investigated the assassination of John F. Kennedy. The Chief Justice of the United States, Earl Warren, led the investigation. In its report, the Warren Commission said that Lee Harvey Oswald had acted alone. It said there was no plot to kill the president. Many Americans never accepted that finding. Some blamed Fidel Castro or the Central Intelligence Agency. Others blamed organized crime. President Kennedy was buried in Arlington National Cemetery across the Potomac River from Washington. An eternal flame burns night and day by his grave.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.